Thank you all for joining the Preemies All Grown Up podcast for our second episode, which today is going to be on Omphalocele, which is what was my biggest hurdle, I guess, to get over when I was first born. And today I will be joined by my co-host, my mother. Her name is Pam. And we'll ask her some questions that I just couldn't remember when I was a child about, like, what the Omphalocele looked like, felt like, and a few other pretty personal questions that I want to know the answers to. All right, so before we dig into the meat of this episode, let's talk a little bit about the background of what an Omphalocele is. According to the CDC, an Omphalocele is known as a complication in birth with an abnormal abdominal wall. Infants, intestines, liver, or other organs are outside of the body through the belly button. The organs are covered in a thin, nearly transparent sac that is hardly ever open or broken. When the baby is developing in weeks 6 through 10 of pregnancy, the intestines push outward and from the umbilical cord. By the 11th week of pregnancy, the intestines normally go back into the belly, and if this doesn't happen, a complication occurs. And the Omphalocele can be small, which is only some of the intestines outside of the body, or it can be large, with many organs outside of the body. And the number of children that are born premature with an Omphalocele is about one in every 5,000. So, Mom, would you mind describing to us, like, what it was for you when you first found out that I was going to have an Omphalocele? And after I was born, what did you think of it when, like, you first saw it?
Well, the medical staff did not even see it. They were supposed to have been able to see that and have done something about it beforehand, which I don't know whether it means an abortion or whatever, which is something that I would not have had. And the first time I saw that Omphalocele, she was in an incubator. I couldn't really touch her. And the thing that was laying beside her was almost as big as she was. It was sort of a ball on the outside of her abdominal wall. So it looked like there was a scab on top of it to say that the skin was not really closed. It was open, and we had to wait for that scab to fall off, just like a regular sore on a body.
So, Mom, there are some risk factors from the CDC that says it can contribute to a baby having an Omphalocele that are things that could have been done by, like, the mother, or they could have been around while pregnant. I just wanted to ask you if these could have been, like, contributing factors, or if your doctors suggested that these were contributing factors. Here it says alcohol and tobacco, and that was with smoking more than one pack a day. There was certain medications, mainly it looks like it's depression medications, serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRIs. And then the other factor is obesity in women, but it doesn't give me any kind of percentage or anything on that statistic.
Okay, I don't think I was the cause of any of it. I was obese, if you like that word. I was just fat. So I did not drink, I did not smoke, or do anything else to harm my baby because I was pregnant. I just didn't do anything like that.
And the doctors, like, weren't questioning you as to if you did these things back in the 80s?
No, they didn't question me. They just found out in the beginning if I smoked, drank, or did anything like that. And I said no, and it was never addressed again.
Okay. Mom, was there any past history in either your family's or Dad's family of any type of birth defects like this?
No, never. There wasn't anything on my mom's side or my dad's side. Nobody had really ever heard of an Imfolicil, so.
Do you think that you were prepared to have a preemie kit at that time because I was your first child?
Oh no, I wasn't prepared, neither was your dad. We didn't know anything about birth defects or anything like that. And when you were born and had that Omphalocele on top of it, it was devastating.
Did you think that it was so, Mom, at the time, what did the doctors say after they had assessed my situation when I was born and like the couple weeks after?
They apologized that they never saw this, but you know, that didn't make or break it. It was a fact. You had a surgeon that saw you in the first on the first day you were born, and she assured us that she could put everything inside, but it was going to take time because you were so small. So it took on the upwards of 4.5 years to get it repaired.
Wow. And in those 4.5 years, and I know probably not in order, but what kinds of surgeries did I have to slowly put that back in?
Well, you probably didn't get your first one until you was maybe one, because at one you was only 6 pounds. So they probably started then, and it didn't matter which way they put it inside, like whether they tried the intestines or the liver or the stomach. They just slowly tried to stick it all in and then let you have time to accept it.
So, was it kind of like skin expanding on a really slow scale?
Yes, it definitely was, because you did not have enough room and you did not have enough skin. They tried to take some of the skin from the Omphalocele, the healthy skin that wasn't thick or damaged in any way, to help them push it back in.
And that was partially successful?
Yeah, it was successful, but we could still see it. Maybe the third operation that you got, it became a little like a little football on top of your stomach.
Okay.
Because when it began, it was laying beside you, and the
Right.
skin sort of stretched so that it could do that.
What did the doctors say was like my prognosis for like what kind of life I might lead later?
They told us that you would be, the doctors gave you a 5% chance of living, 5% out of 100. That's not very good odds. But each week, each day, she just kept gaining weight and breathing on her own, and that was the best thing possible. They said because of that sac on the outside that had some of her intestines in it, it gave her room to breathe, so it basically made her live.
So, and that's because the lung development is also very early in a person born at like 27 weeks.
Yeah, you was very the lungs were underdeveloped, so that was a good reason for her being able to succeed in life, because it was on the outside and it gave her room to breathe.
And produce more healthy sized lungs.
Yes, they were able to grow.
So when the Omphalocele like was put back in and it was kind of healed or mostly healed, what then did they say that I would have any complications later in life?
They did not say, I mean, they said she'd be able to have a baby and do all the things that everybody else did. Now nothing inhibited her except her left eye. She was blind.
So for babies with infalocels, there's a survival rate of over 90%, and the only issue is the actual infalocele or sac. The survival rate for the babies who have had an infalocele who develop serious problems with other organs later in life is about 70%. For me, I can say that I do have asthma that is pretty bad, especially at season changes, and I get short of breath easy. I have had a deviated septum, but I really don't think that has to deal with a malformed skull, or because I was early, my father also had a deviated septum. I currently don't have any intestinal problems, but I did experience a bowel obstruction when I was in my 20s, when I had to have my gallbladder removed because it could not be removed laparoscopically. They actually had to open me up and get it because it, of course, because they had to shove everything back into place, is not in the correct area where most people's gallbladders were. Surprise. I know, it's great to be a preemie sometimes. So now I want to talk more with my mom about the social aspects of having a baby who had an infalocele and what that was like for her and my dad in the late 80s and early 90s as parents. Mom, do you think sometimes, like back in the past, did you and dad think, why me, or why did my baby have to be born this way?
Yes, of course we did. We wanted a normal baby, but you were given to us, so we adjusted to it in the ways that we had to, in work and everything, because Corey's insurance ran out when she had that infalocele with her dad, and I had to work because I was the only insurance carrier for her, and we had lots of bills. I mean, they were gigantic to us. We could not take care of all of them, so the insurance was necessary.
Well, yeah, I think insurance is definitely a struggle for a lot of people today in the political climate and just the healthcare industry. It's, you know, I think we've got to fix it somehow, but no one really knows how to do that, and it's sad. That financial reasoning is one of the main reasons that a parent will return to work or even go back to work early from like maternity leave or whatnot in order to still provide for the family. What did you guys do to try to make sure that you were getting enough sleep and taking care of yourself, but you also felt like you were taking care of me, who was stuck in the hospital until I was, what, 4 months?
Yeah, you were 4 months, and the things that we did was your dad would drop me off on the way to work, and I would stay there until we felt comfortable to go home, but that was when I was on maternity leave and leave of absence. I was fortunate enough to work for a company that helped me out with that.
What did you and Dad face financially? Like, what kind of things did you try to cut out of the budget or have to cut out of the budget in order to make, like, payments on insurance stuff and medical bills or doctor's visits?
Well, we had all the bills that everybody else had, and we wanted to be able to pay them, but we wanted Corey to have the best of care also. So it was a struggle with an electric bill or with a gas bill. We sort of jungled them. We pay one this month, one the next month. It was really terrible. It was terrible.
And you spoke a little bit there of trying to find me the best care. In that time in the 80s, what was being suggested to you guys for like specialists?
The specialists all came from the hospital she was born in, and they mainly were children's hospital doctors because we thought they were the best of the best, and that's what we wanted for you. So most of them came from the children's hospital.
And you guys, did you guys do any kind of research or anything beforehand? I know, like, the computers and cell phones and all that stuff weren't so readily available, but did you try to research physicians before we saw them?
We did, but mainly the research. We'd ask Dr. Caniano. She was your surgeon. She knew best what was required for you. She gave us your eye doctor. She gave us your stomach doctor, your feet doctor, everything. Everything.
And do you think that that kind of what would be called now like gatekeeper of my care, that she did a good job?
I think she did a very good job. She put all of Corey's intestines and stomach and liver, that she put them all inside her, but she had one little pudge, and Dr. Caniano wanted to get rid of that pudge, so she did.
Yeah, and that was just so I would look like I had a more normal figure.
Yes, a flat stomach and not a little pudge on it all the time, to think maybe that she had to lose weight or do this, because that was something that she wasn't going to get rid of unless Dr. Caniano did it.
Gotcha. And I did see her later in my life for other surgeries where she did pretty much save my life.
Yes, she did.
So, Mom, what did it mean to you when you learned that you had a premature baby? Like, what did that mean in the 80s?
In the 80s, I don't think so much was known about it. And the only protection that we ever did was try to hide it so that nobody could hit it or nobody could accidentally bump against it, because we did not know what was going to happen if they did.
Right, so it was more of a precaution than anything else.
Yes, very much a precaution.
Did you think that you treated me differently because I was so early?
Probably, we probably did it unconsciously because every other child in the family had never had anything like this. And my mom just told us you were an ethereal person because you were going to do great things, and you have.
I'm really glad that you think so, Mom. I don't know if I absolutely agree with that yet, but I try. Do you think that you and Dad only decided to have one kid because I was so complicated, in essence?
No, we wanted brothers and sisters for you. I would have had as many children as I could, but I couldn't get pregnant again. I don't know if that was the reason you were born. I don't know.
Okay. I don't know if I would have liked to have more brothers and sisters. I kind of enjoy being an only child because I am very stingy.
Well, don't I know that? You would have liked to have been an only child, and you were.
Yes. Do you think that you changed how you treated me in scholastic things more differently than like if you knew I was just a normal kid?
Yes, I think so, because they told us that you were going to be a vegetable. So we worked with you a lot, like a lot. We worked with you in everything, even so far as depth perception. Sorry.
I will also say that I remember being able to try out for things like sports, like t-ball. I did dance, I did tap, I did horseback riding lessons. I don't feel like you made me feel self-conscious about my Umfala seal or like anything, I needed to be like super careful because I was breakable. I feel like you guys treated me pretty much like a normal kid. You just seemed a little more cautious about more dangerous things.
Yeah, so we like to take horseback ridings.
So to round out this episode, I would like to ask my mom, what would you like to say to preemies who are all grown up now and to preemie parents who are possibly listening to this podcast?
To the parents, I would like to say hang in there because they will grow and they will be productive people in society. To the preemies, I'd say way to go because if you're grown up now and you were a preemie in the 80s or 90s or even presently, you should be proud of yourself.
Yeah, because we all fight to get to the place that we are now, and it's really important because sometimes even the small victories that we accomplish in the day, like just getting through a day of work or getting through a day with, you know, extreme fatigue or whatever kind of ailments we may have from our prematurity or just from our life in general, being able to keep on going is, I think, a trait of preemies. I think we're types of people who don't give up easily.
That is true. A preemie is stubborn, and her doctor told us she would be stubborn, and she's got this far because of her demeanor, because she doesn't give up, and because she's beautiful.
Thank you so much, Mom. I really appreciate everything that you've said here today, and I honestly learned a lot about myself and a lot about my Umfala seal, which I didn't even really know how to spell until I started to research this episode. In the next episode of Preemies All Grown Up, we are going to do an interview with my lovely husband and our wife. It is going to be the episode of what it's like to be in a relationship with a preemie. It really should get interesting because I know I'm not the easiest person to live with. So if you all would join us next week, I would really love to have you here. Make sure you follow us on Instagram at preemiesallgrownup and the email address if you want to share your story or any kind of tips or anything at all. It's preemiesallgrownup@gmail.com. I will see you guys in the next episode. Thank you.